evening and welcome to the April 2025 edition of Outbeat News in Depth. I'm Greg Moralia. Well, this month, Napa Valley College accepted the donation of an historic life-size sculpture created by artist Dina Angelwing. It honors Gilbert Baker, the creator of the original Rainbow Pride flag, and you'll see him sitting on a bench with his two close friends, Tom Taylor and Jerome Goldstein. The artist is here with us tonight to talk more about the significance of this piece, especially now when the pride flag Gilbert Baker created is being banned in states across the U.S. We'll also talk more about these bans with Charlie Beal, president of the Gilbert Baker Foundation. And finally, we'll share some information about an international LGBT law enforcement conference being held in, of all places, Austin, Texas this summer. You'll hear about the challenges conference organizers are having in light of the many anti-transgender laws being proposed in the state. It's all coming up next, right after your Outbeat Radio News for this Sunday, April 27th, 2025. I'd love to change the world. This is Greg Moralia with your Outbeat Radio News for the week of April 27th, 2025. The Trump administration has opened a new snitch line to report what it calls violations of the president's executive order, quote, protecting children from chemical and surgical mutilation, end quote. In two actions this week, the Department of Health and Human Services continued its efforts to end gender-affirming care for transgender youth with a new whistleblower portal and the launch of an investigation of a, quote, major pediatric teaching hospital, end quote, over the alleged firing of a nurse because she sought a religious exemption to avoid administering puberty blockers and hormones to minor patients. The snitch line was shared publicly earlier this month with guidance for potential whistleblowers published on the Health and Human Services website. It says, quote, you have three options to report a tip or complaint related to the chemical and surgical mutilation of children or whistleblower retaliation, end quote. And the guidance goes on with instructions to provide identifying information of those involved in the alleged order violation. It references Executive Order 14187, which is titled Chemical and Surgical Mutilation. That order has been blocked by multiple federal judges with temporary restraining orders, but the Trump administration continues to invoke it in its crackdown on doctors and hospitals, seemingly to ignore the court orders. One ruling by U.S. District Judge Lauren King in the Western District of Washington termed the order a violation of constitutional protections, quote, by treating people differently based on sex or transgender status, end quote. Those cases continue to make their way through the courts. The concurrent hospital investigation is designed to showcase the administration's weaponization of a 50-year-old federal anti-abortion provision known as the Church Amendments to protect anti-trans whistleblowers. Those amendments allow religious accommodation to anti-abortion healthcare providers based on, quote, religious beliefs or moral convictions respecting sterilization procedures, end quote. And in Arizona, Planned Parenthood will resume providing gender-affirming healthcare to transgender patients. The chapter had previously paused the treatments in response to the Department of Health and Human Services sending out a memo warning federally funded healthcare institutions against providing gender-affirming care. The Arizona branch faced public pressure after news publications began reporting on its decision to end trans-related health care. Patients receiving gender treatment at the branch told news outlets that they had received voicemails informing them that their upcoming appointments had been canceled. Planned Parenthood added a banner to its website explaining the situation, and in that explanation, the branch said it had been sent a letter from the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services directing them not to provide gender-affirming care services using Medicaid funding. In response, the Arizona branch decided it would indefinitely discontinue gender treatment for transgender patients. As stated before, a federal judge has issued a nationwide block on that executive order, and the administration is facing criminal contempt charges for defying that order. It remains to be seen if federal officials will attempt to defy that court ruling. And in Indiana, police have arrested a mother who threatened the life and family of a sixth grade LGBT plus elementary school teacher after the teacher assigned the woman's daughter a project asking students about different flags, including the Rainbow Pride flag. The parent confronted the teacher at school while carrying a gun, something forbidden by law in that state, and later emailed the teacher calling her, quote, a child predator, end quote. She also said, quote, kiss your kids goodbye, end quote. Rivers withdrew her daughter from school that day and allegedly came to the school to confront the teacher while carrying a holstered firearm in her waist, though she didn't brandish it. Police charged the 48-year-old Carrie Rivers with a felony possession of a firearm on school property and misdemeanor harassment via written communication after confronting the teacher inside Valley Mills Elementary School earlier this month. And finally, here locally, don't forget, Napa Valley College is hosting a screening of the documentary Sally, a film that tells the story of the Bay Area feminist and lesbian activist Sally Gearhart. The screening will feature a talkback with the filmmaker, and it takes place on Thursday, May 8th at 6:30 p.m. in the Performing Arts Center at Napa Valley College. This is a public event. Everyone's welcome to attend, and you can learn more on our website at outbeatnews.com. If you have a local LGBTQ news story, announcement, or an event you'd like to share with our listeners in this segment, tell us about it by going to our website at outbeatnews.com. Just click the Submit Event button at the top of the page. For Outbeat Radio News, I'm Greg Moralia.
I'd like to change the world. I'd like to change the world.
Earlier this month, the state of Utah passed a law banning the flying of the Rainbow Pride flag on any government property. Bans like this traditionally have been thought about only in communist countries. But even here in California, bans like this are being put into place. My first guest tonight is Charlie Beal. He is the president of the Gilbert Baker Foundation, an organization named after the creator of the rainbow flag, Gilbert Baker. Charlie, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Great to have you. And, you know, there's a lot of great things to talk about, but also some really troubling news to talk about regarding bans on our beloved Pride flag. But last we talked, we were discussing the flag and the map when we brought the exhibit to Napa Valley College. And then you took the exhibit to Paris for the Olympics. So for our listeners maybe who don't know about flag and the map, tell us a little bit about that. But then what was the experience like in Paris?
Well, Flag of the Map is an exhibit that we dreamed up in collaboration with a group called Report Out. They're a United Kingdom-based group that reports on human rights and specifically LGBTQ plus rights in the 73 countries where it's illegal. And we decided that instead of, you know, doing yet another exhibit about Gilbert Baker, we wanted to hear the stories of individuals around the globe who love the rainbow flag. So the project was very simple. We solicited people to send a photograph of them and their flag and to answer two questions. What is this photo about? And what does the rainbow flag mean to you? And we took those photos and responses and created a series of placards that's now almost 60 of them from over 40 countries. And this exhibit has been done almost 15 times in everywhere from Malta to San Francisco, Napa College to Provincetown. And then just last summer at the Paris Olympics, we were lucky enough to meet people at EuroPride in 2023 in Malta, where we had the exhibit. We were lucky enough to meet people from who had connections to the Paris Olympics, and we just started making inquiries, and we ended up shipping the exhibit over there. I was thinking of going to Paris myself, Greg, but, you know, it's a little crazy going during the Olympics. So we were lucky enough that one of our main photographers was there shooting for Nike, of all things. So he went and shot the exhibit for us and, you know, made contact with those people. And it was very successful. There was a place called Pride House, which was actually on a big, kind of a big barge right on the Seine River, right in the middle of everything. And they had regular rotating exhibits there, and ours was one of them. And it's really beautiful. You can see it on the website, www.gilbertbaker.com. Go to Flag in the Map or go to flagandthemap.com and you can see pictures of it.
It's a stunning exhibit. We have it on permanent display now in our Pride Center on the campus of Napa Valley College. And it's one of the first things people notice, of course, when they walk in, and we always get compliments about it. And it really does have a very powerful message. So we'll put those links that you just mentioned on our website at outbeatnews.com. You can go and check out the exhibit for yourself. And it's going to be shown coming up in Austin, Texas, at the International LGBTQ Law Enforcement Conference. And I think having it in Texas right now is really an important thing. Thoughts?
Yeah. I think that sounds wonderful. And I'm so proud that you're going to have the exhibit there. It is a very powerful exhibit in the way that it's curated, just so your listeners will know. These are individual placards, but they're curated in a way that there's almost a narrative and a story, and people mm-hmm. have gotten to the end of this exhibit, and they've, you know, it fills them with joy and it fills them with tears, frankly. So it really connects to people, and we really encourage people to take a look at it.
And absolutely.
And just, yep. And for us, the next place we are taking it, other than your exhibit in Austin, we're taking it down to World Pride in Washington, D.C., the belly of the beast.
Yeah, no kidding.
And we'll be there in June, and we're doing a giant flag project. We're going to have a 1,000-foot rainbow flag at the front of the parade. And, you know, I'm happy to announce, Greg, that just this week we found out that the whole Gay Men's Chorus, whose concert at Kennedy Center was canceled by our president, that they're going to be carrying the flag. 600 of them will be carrying our 1,000-foot flag, and they'll be singing all the way
Perfect.
Through the parade in Washington, D.C. So we will have a big presence down there helping to, you know, increase visibility. You know, that's what we do when people are trying to stuff us back in the closet.
Well, and before we get talking about all the oppression, there's some other good news in addition to flagging the map. Since last we talked, the famous flagpole at Castrone Market was declared officially to be a historical landmark.
Yeah. Well, Greg, thank you for your help on that. And just so people know, this is something we worked on for 4 years.
Yeah.
It is a flagpole installation that was created by Gilbert Baker in 1996. It's something he had been working on since 1986, doing drawings and sketches. And at the 1996 Castro Street Fair, he managed to buttonhole the mayor, Willie Brown. And, 1997, got my date wrong. He buttonholed the mayor, Willie Brown, and he pitched the idea, and Willie Brown turned into an aide and said, make it so. So there is this flagpole that's always had our six-color rainbow flag there. There's a beautiful bronze plaque at the base, speaks of Gilbert's name. But over the years, people thought it was just another flagpole and a city flagpole. They tried to put other flags up, and we said, this really needs to be preserved as a work of art by a great queer artist. And so we started a petition, a letter writing campaign, and we finally convinced the Historical Commission in San Francisco and then the full Board of Supervisors and the mayor to landmark it. And we did that at a wonderful ceremony this past September. So while the flag is being banned in cities and now states across the country, there is this one flag and this one flagpole that is landmarked, you know, that will hopefully be there for decades and centuries to come.
Well, first of all, congratulations on that. I think it's a significant accomplishment and a wonderful tribute to Gilbert. But I think it's also, what's the word I'm looking for? I think it's an indicator of the power that this flag has. Talk about the symbol of the flag from its evolution in 78 to today. It's a very powerful symbol in the world, isn't it?
It is. It started out as a local San Francisco thing in 78. It caught on very quickly. Pretty soon in the 80s, Gilbert was, decorating the gay games with it. And in 1994, he created a mile-long rainbow flag for Stonewall 25, which was a huge international celebration, kind of the precursor to the World Pride celebrations. And he took pieces of that mile-long flag and cut it up and gave it to contingents from all around the globe. Mm-hmm. And by 1995, what was a national symbol became an international symbol. And he tirelessly promoted it around the globe. And at this point, that flag, according to Jim Farragon, one of the top flag experts in the world, he says it's like, at this point, one of the six most recognizable symbols on the planet, meaning when people see it, they know what it is. Mm-hmm. From Mongolia to Timbuktu, people know what it is. And it's, you know, we're talking about, you know, the French tricolor, the British Union Jack, the American flag, the McDonald's arches, the Nike swoosh, and the rainbow flag. It really is that big. And because of that, it's also become a target. You know, people who want to oppress our community and to erase us, they try to erase the flag. That's the first step in their attempt to, you know, deny us our rights.
It's actually pretty frightening. I think probably most people, when they hear about Russia creating a communist country, creating laws that oppress the flag and make it a crime to wear it on your shirt, you think, okay, well, that's Russia. That's a communist country. That would never happen here. But it is happening here in the United States. And we saw it first really at the federal level with the ban of being able to fly the flag on any kind of federal property. But now we're seeing it ban in states. And this is something you're fighting against. Tell us about what you're seeing.
Well, I want to clarify. There is not a federal ban precisely quite yet. It has been banned on our U.S. embassies. That is something that President Trump did in his first term, and Biden reversed it. And then the Republicans in Congress did it again at the end of the Biden term, and now Trump has made that ban on the embassies pretty complete. There have been, we noticed, a series of local bans in cities and towns back in, I think it was 2022. Somebody called us and said, hey, they're going to ban the flag in Cold Spring, New York. And we're what are you talking about? That's crazy. And then we did our research and found out it had already been banned in 10 towns and school districts around the country. So we sounded the alarm, Greg, and we partnered with the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union, and created our Save the Rainbow Flag initiative. But these bans have kept coming. There are now bans in over 60 towns and school districts across the country. And sadly, just about a week ago, a statewide ban, a very draconian statewide ban, was enacted in the state of Utah. And there's another one happening in Idaho, but the Utah one is just bad. It's not only on state government buildings, they forbid it on local government buildings and in schools as well. And, you know, their arguments are always pretty easy to shoot down. That's the only way I can explain it. But I would just put it this way. In 1937, Adolf Hitler replaced the German flag with the Nazi flag. And within a year, it was the only flag allowed on federal buildings. It was the only flag allowed on local buildings. It was the only flag allowed to be put into schools. And so at this point, we find the Republican Party in the United States standing shoulder to shoulder with the Nazis, essentially, and using their very same tactics. I think it's shameful. I think it is a horrible precedent. But we're fighting back. We've managed to overturn or prevent bans in six towns so far. We fought hard with Equality Utah. Unfortunately, we did not have a victory there. But I'll tell you, Greg, we've got two federal lawsuits coming up, one in Hamtramck, Michigan, that we're very hopeful about. We'll find out this summer. And, you know, we could have a victory there that would overturn many of these bans.
You know, and I think listeners might think, well, it's, you know, it's just a flag. It's not an important, you know, it's not like they're locking people up. But symbolically, they're locking people up. I mean, that was one of the steps, as you alluded to, in World War II that preceded the rounding up of people, the imposition of that Nazi flag. And what I find ironic is in Utah, and I think one of the even legislators talked about this in that law, is that a teacher can bring in a Nazi flag to a classroom to talk about it as a piece of history and an artifact, but they can't bring the pride flag in.
It is that bad. It is horrible. And let me tell you, it starts with the flags because, you know, we remember Kristallnacht in 1939, where if you had a Star of David on your business, suddenly the gangs of Nazi, you know, thugs were out breaking windows and burning businesses. So this, you know, people should not discount the fact that it is, quote, merely a symbol. it starts with that, but every town and school district we've seen that's banned the flag, if you go and do some research 1 year later, hate crimes are increasing.
Sure.
So it is the beginning of a campaign to erase and oppress sexual and gender minorities. And I think people should wake up and really fight back. They should help us fight back. They should donate to our Save the Rainbow Flag initiative, because we are the only people right now out there on a national level fighting back. We work with local activists everywhere when we can. We're super happy that down in Orange County, just this past week in Orange County, California, the Lavender Dems, a local group, went to a town council meeting when this local councilman from Orange County was going to try to ban the flag. And, you know, he had about a dozen supporters, and the Lavender Dems showed up with 120 people, and they stopped that ban in its tracks. So you can fight back. You can win. We have a whole page on our website of winning strategies. You know, this is what people have done around the country to win. We just need to, you know, we just need people's support, and we need people to hear about it on radio programs like yours, Greg.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you about that situation in Orange County, which, you know, is one of the most conservative counties in California for sure. But it's nice to see that people are pushing back. But just because we live in such an accepting and embracing and somewhat protective state doesn't mean that we don't have a responsibility, all of us in this state, to fight.
Well, Greg, point out to a lot of people that there are more individual bans in the state of California than any other state. There are 9 of them. And I think one of them got overturned recently. Maybe it's down to 8. I'll go look. We have an interactive map on our website. You literally, it's the map of the United States, and it's filled with red pins everywhere. You click on a pin, and it'll take you to a story, you know, the story about that locale and what's going on there. But, you know, we do have good volunteers. We are working hard, and we've had to set aside a lot of our other work that we would like to do with the Gilbert Baker Foundation, because this, you know, this rear guard action, as I like to say, has become the most important thing we're doing.
Well, back to a positive story, and again, a way to honor Gilbert. We are so excited at Napa Valley College to have received the Freedom to Love sculpture that you helped us get from the estate of Tom Taylor and Jerry Goldstein. And I think it, in today's world, that sculpture is going to be more important than ever in both documenting history and of course, providing a wonderful tribute to Gilbert, but also Gilbert has that rainbow flag on his shoulder on that bench, and that's going to be visible for generations to come.
Right. It's a beautiful bronze statue, indestructible.
Yes.
That a sculptor named Dina Angel Wing created at the request of Jerome Goldstein in the, you know, in the last years of his life. His husband, the wonderful Tom Taylor, had passed away, and Jerome thought it would be a fitting tribute to them and to Gilbert. They were great patrons of Gilbert Baker in San Francisco. They helped run a diversity foundation in his name, and they allowed Gilbert to use their big sewing loft on Isis Street, San Francisco, for many, many, many of his big rainbow flag projects. And when we unfurled that mile-long flag in New York City, Tom Taylor was there manning the truck and making sure the flag was coming out of the truck in the right way. So, you know, I dearly loved them. They were good to Gilbert. They were great to myself and the foundation, hosting us many times, just putting us up while we're in San Francisco and helping us out. So it is a wonderful tribute to a wonderful couple that were, you know, did a lot in San Francisco and did a lot for our community. And they deserve to be honored that way. And I'm really, really grateful to you and the college for hosting this beautiful sculpture.
Well, we couldn't be more excited about it. One more time, tell our listeners where they can go to learn more about everything we've discussed, and more importantly, what our listeners can do to support preserving and protecting the Rainbow Pride Flag.
Go to www.gilbertbaker.com. Gilbert Baker, that's what you got to remember. We just launched a new website, well, an update one, and you can look at the Save the Rainbow Flag initiative right there. You can fill out a form to report in about your local community, to volunteer. And of course, please, please, please go and donate. We're trying to raise money for a legal fund for our federal case in Hamtramck and another federal case in New York. Lawyers cost money. We need help.
Fantastic. We've been talking with Charlie Beal, who's the president of the Gilbert Baker Foundation and one of our dear friends. Charlie, thanks so much for spending time with us.
Thank you, Greg, for having me.
And if you're just joining us, you're listening to Outbeat News in Depth here on KRCB Radio. I'm Greg Moralia. This month, Napa Valley College became the new home of the Freedom to Love sculpture, created by Bay Area artist Adina Angel Wing. This life-size, all-bronze piece features Gilbert Baker, creator of the Rainbow Pride Flag, sitting on a bench with his two close friends, Tom Taylor and Jerry Goldstein. It's a truly magnificent piece. And here to share more about this piece of art is the artist herself, Adina Angel Wing. Adina, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
What a pleasure it is to have you on here and to talk about this amazing sculpture called The Freedom to Love. But before we get talking about that, I would love for our listeners to learn a little bit about you. You've been in the art world for a long time, but tell us about yourself and the art that you've been doing.
It's kind of a long history, and I studied art, when I came to the U.S., I wasn't born here. I found actually more opportunity and to develop my work, and opportunities to actually make a living doing what I do. I have an interest in supporting causes that I like. So I've done portraits, a couple of portraits for the African American community that are in the city, mm-hmm. Two people that contributed a lot to the community and also to the general community. So I like projects, to highlight projects that I feel strongly about. Mm-hmm. Over the years, I've had, as artists, we tend to be kind of outside of the general community and interact with other communities that are not exactly in the center. I've had many friends. We lost a lot of friends in the 80s during the AIDS pandemic, mm-hmm. both in galleries. Many of them were actually gallery owners that sure. Presented works of artists and artists in the community. Friends, just like any of us. When this project came about, I was really honored to do something so that I feel strongly about. Because really we are all different and we're all the same. So.
Sure.
Well, that's kind of quick background.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about this project. You mentioned you've done portraits, but this is very different. This is a life-size sculpture in bronze. Is that mm-hmm. is that a type of art and sculpting that you've done before?
I've been working in bronze for many years, what I've done before was portraits, but I've done figures before. I mean, I still do figurative work, and mostly what I do is focus on a theme. So I've done, you know, Metaphors for the Female Body. That was a series of like almost about 10 sculptures in kind of exploring the idea and trying to understand it. And and then another project was looking at different styles of artists from the early 20th century. So I go through different themes that I try to develop and explore in terms of trying to understand it. But this is definitely a much bigger project.
So, Dina, tell me what prompted you to do this sculpture. I mean, what was the inspiration behind it?
Well, I met Jerry, Dr. Goldstein, through a friend of mine. And actually, she's been very involved in the gay community for many years. And when Dr. Goldstein was looking into commemorating Tom, his husband Tom was very sick at the time, and Gilbert Baker, who designed the rainbow flag, had died very suddenly about a year earlier. So he felt that it was important to commemorate both of them, because Tom was the guardian of the flag. So it made sense that the two of them would be on a bench together. My first drawings and trying to figure out how to express the connection and the idea were actually only with two people. In a space, this is what Jerry wanted, a space between them for people to sit down and take pictures. It took a while to evolve. Mostly two things. We started when the pandemic started. So, and before there were any vaccines, so it was actually very hard to meet, but we did meet outside in the Castro. Anyway, when I was thinking about this, idea of commemorating the Gilbert Baker and his efforts and what it means to the community and everybody else hopefully understand what the meaning of the flag is. Thought that, you know, we need that. It's important to have two people sitting on the bench, with an understanding that they are very close to each other, that they have a loving connection. So that's when I asked Jerry if it's okay if I put him and Tom together, because that this is really the essence, and especially it's very clear to the LGBTQ community, but it's really not clear, especially now, to everyone else. And that was kind of my feeling, and it's a very it represents a lot of hope, which is really the meaning of the flag. But it represents hope to understand that these two, the rights that everybody else has to love, which is a very normal emotion, and actually something that we all need, is universal, and it really doesn't matter.
Well, and it's stunning. I think what's so impressive about it, aside from the symbolism, which is very significant, is that you've created this life-size, it's a life-size bench with these three very powerful characters sitting on it. And it does very much symbolize what Gilbert created and what he intended. And I think the title of it, The Freedom to Love, is beautifully depicted by Gilbert's two close friends, Tom and Jerry, sitting next to each other with Gilbert on this bench. How long did it take you to build this?
Oh, it took 2 years. I started just trying to understand what's the most important thing, which is really what I try to do with my work anyway. I mean, what am I trying to convey, and what's the essence of it? You know, it's kind of like what you're doing, a journalist asking why. Mm-hmm. Why am I doing it? What is important here? And once you understand why, then the idea can actually congeal. You can actually, you know, with playing around, which, you know, I don't play around with words, and for me it's to express an emotion. Mm-hmm. And get the feeling to express the feeling of what I'm trying to do, and also get the idea come through.
Mm-hmm.
So once I actually understood that what I needed to do is express love, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Love between two people, and it's something really beautiful. I mean, if anybody can find someone to love and share their life with, I mean, what else is there? You know, it's really it's the support that we get from each other and from our community. That's, to me, the most important thing.
Yeah, it's really as simple as that, isn't it? Well, you have Gilbert sitting on the bench, and if our listeners haven't seen a picture of the sculpture yet, you can go to our website at outbeatnews.com. We have a picture right in the center of the page. And then you've got the rainbow flag that Gilbert created draped over his shoulder in color with bronze. And I remember watching a video of you kind of talking about that process, but coloring the bronze wasn't an easy task, was it?
No, it took us a while. It took us 2 or 3 days. It's pigments. We didn't paint it. Mm-hmm. Which, I mean, it's possible to paint. You know, when you look at the flag on Market Street, the big flag, it's big and bright, and the colors are strong and sensuous, we did start with the colors very muted, but when we put it, it wasn't expressive enough. So, the next day and looking at it, oh no, it's not bright enough. And so it took a while. It's a pigment. So it is sensitive. Over time it will have to be redone. The sculptures are basically covered with wax, which is the way we treat any bronze sculpture. Mm-hmm. So same thing over time, the sculptures will have to be covered with wax to preserve it.
Well, it's going to be absolutely stunning in this location that's been picked out. I'm so proud that We were able to work with you and the family to find a location for it at Napa Valley College. We would love for the public to come and meet you and to see the sculpture at a dedication ceremony we have set for Friday, May 9th at 1 p.m. It's going to be in the McCarthy Library building. The McCarthy Library was named after one of our presidents who I had the pleasure of working for. He was a staunch supporter of the LGBT community and the building of programming at our college to support LGBT students. And as I've shared with you, we have an LGBT studies program there. We have the largest LGBT book collection in that library in Northern California. And what a treat it's going to be for our students to be able to come into that library and to be able to see Gilbert sitting on that bench with his two best friends and to be able to sit there and think about that history. It's just such a gift to the college and to our community. Let me ask you one final question. As you think about the impact that you want this sculpture to have on young people, what comes to mind for you? What do you want them to see and get, future generations now who are going to come to the college and see this bench? What do you want it to inspire in them?
Basically tolerance and compassion. I mean, that's something we really need right now. To anybody, you know, we may have different traditions, different ethnic groups, different. We're all people,
right?
So, you know, I'm, you know, as I said before, I've lost a lot of friends over the years, and you know, we should be helping each other.
Love it. Well, we've been talking with Dina Angelwing, who is the amazing artist who created the Freedom to Love sculpture. Once again, we would love for the public to come and be part of this dedication ceremony set for Friday, May 9th at 1 p.m. at Napa Valley College. You can find out all the details on our website at outbeatnews.com. Dina, thank you so much for spending some time with us today.
Thank you.
Now, if you're a regular listener, you know that I had a very long working career in law enforcement and am still actively involved in providing LGBT awareness training to law enforcement officers from across the country. This summer in Austin, Texas, Austin Police Department is set to host an international LGBTQ law enforcement conference, and it's the first time this event's been held in the United States. Austin's working really hard to counter widespread perception that Texas is the second most dangerous state in the country for transgender people to be. And what about all of the transgender officers hoping to attend this conference? Well, here to share more about how Austin is rolling out the red carpet for all LGBTQ members of law enforcement is conference organizer, Sergeant Michael Crumrine. Michael, welcome to the show.
Very happy to be here. Thank you very much, Greg, for the invitation.
Well, I'm excited to share the information about this conference that's going to be taking place and to talk about how it came to Austin. I doubt most of our listeners are even aware that there is an international LGBTQ plus law enforcement conference. So let's start there. Tell us where this conference came about, because this is not the first one, right?
No, this is not. And it's actually kind of an interesting story how it ended up here. So the very first conference happened back in 2016, and it was in Amsterdam. So several LGBTQ criminal justice professionals from around the world got together and said, you know what? We really need a professional development conference. Just like many other professionals within our industry, women in our industry, people of color in our industry, et cetera, we really don't have one on an international scale for LGBTQ identifying individuals. So they were very fortunate in that the first one that they had was incredibly successful in Amsterdam, in part because the EU provided them €1 million grant to host the event. At the latter part of 2022, the International Committee reached out and said, they said we would like to entertain a proposal from y'all, which is kind of a big deal because it's not just me and it's not just our organization, the Lesbian Gay Peace Officers Association. I mean, we had to get the city of Austin on board with it, the city management of Austin on board with it, the police department, because this is a big deal. There's a financial commitment. There's a commitment from the city to stay the course, all of that. And I was incredibly fortunate in that my then chief of staff, and she's still currently my chief of staff, Chief Robin Henderson, was a huge advocate for this. And my chief at the time, Joe Chacone, was as well. We took this to city management. We took this to city council. They saw the value in it. And so we submitted the proposal.
It's really impressive. And to give people a sense of what these are about, I wasn't at the first one in Amsterdam, but I was at the one in Canada. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm not sure our listeners have a real sense of the thousands and thousands of LGBTQ law enforcement officers that there are around the world. And the conferences are just impressive because you do get people to travel from departments from all over the world and then converge to come together to train. And we find so many of our interests and our issues and our challenges are the same, and yet there's great variety and opportunities to learn from other people. I think it's interesting that you pointed out that the committee didn't think that the U.S. was one of the best places or safest places or most advanced places to hold a conference.
Well, they were looking at, you know, there's a big European influence, right? Mm-hmm. That's kind of the beginning of this. And, you know, Europeans have looked at LGBTQ rights more holistically as them being human rights. And we have those pockets in the U.S. But I think anybody who's worked in the criminal justice system, and especially what we've seen materialize, right, in the last 6 months, you know, where we fought some of the battles that we had fought and won and were settled or not.
Right.
And I think that's what they were leading to. Not that we're horrible, right? I mean, we're certainly not, you know, certain parts of Africa or certain parts of, you know, the world. It isn't Russia here. So it's not to that level, but I can understand why there was some apprehension.
Sure.
On their part.
And the decision to bring the conference to Austin clearly came well before the results of the 2024 election. And now, you know, sort of some of the things, some of the suspicions that maybe some of those EU countries had have materialized a bit. But you've worked really hard to make Austin a place that is going to be inviting of especially transgender officers from around the world. Can you talk a little bit about maybe some of the fear that you've seen and what the city of Austin and the Austin Police Department are doing to make it a safe place?
Great question, Greg, and thanks for that opportunity. So the city of Austin has, for an incredibly long time, has been very, very supportive of the queer community. I don't know if some of your listeners are aware of this, but if you look at the demographics of the city of Austin, we rank as far as percentage of our population that identifies somewhere along the queer spectrum as third in the nation, behind San Francisco and Portland. So we've had a very robust queer community here in Austin, and our support for transgender and gender non-binary individuals has been absolute. The city has taken various different stances and policies in place to create as welcoming of an environment and as protective of an environment as possible. There's things that we've done within the Austin Police Department to do the same. We have a few of our officers that are trans officers that people weren't aware of. But actually, because of some issues with our officers, we were able to get the city to change. Like, one of the things I'm most proud of that I was able to help, not just me, but our organization, the LGPOA, was able to push forward, is one of our officers was having challenges with their healthcare. They were paying more for certain medications than cisgender officers were. And we brought this contradiction forward to the city, and the city recognized it immediately. And because of that, now the city, every time we bid for our health insurance to mm-hmm. cover our city employees, mm-hmm. It includes and has to include full transitioning health care benefits for anybody nice. Who works for the city of Austin.
Great.
So that is one of the things that we've done. One of the things that you'll see me putting out probably within the next 30 days is a transgender resource guide. So I want folks to know who come to the conference, who is going to be a doctor, should I need one, right? I got a cold, you know, you never know. When I went to the Toronto conference, I walked off the plane with strep throat.
Right? Oh, geez.
Like you just never know, right? You
right.
get cold, you get sick, you get that. We want to be able to show people or have a really adequate up-to-date guide if you need to go somewhere for healthcare, if you need to go somewhere that is a trans-friendly business to have lunch or to eat or to socialize, or heck, even we have several social events that are built into this conference. So if you want to go somewhere and get a haircut or get your nails done or go to a beauty parlor or whatever those things may be, right? We want to be able to direct you to those businesses that you know you're going to be safe. We're taking extra precautions within our department and within the security of the conference as we put it together. We will make sure that the restrooms that are available at the conference are gender neutral. There's going to be several other things that we're going to do to make things as comfortable as possible for our trans and non-binary officers and other criminal justice professionals that are coming here. If you go to the website that we have for the conference, I put out a welcoming video. My chief put out a welcoming video touching upon some of these things. So we're very cognizant of this and are taking a whole lot of steps.
That's great. That's really, really great. You know, especially when you look at some of the maps that these various LGBT organizations, civil rights monitoring organizations, if you want to call them that, are putting out, you know, Texas is right next to Florida as being, quote unquote, the two most dangerous places in the U.S. to visit for trans people.
Mm-hmm. But having visited Austin, I can really say it's quite the exception to the rule, perhaps for the rest of the state of Texas.
Because Austin is a cool city come to and have fun in.
Yes, it really is. And I'll be the first one to testify to that. I was there just a couple of years ago and was with some friends downtown, went to several gay bars and, you know, gay neighborhood areas. And I never felt unsafe. I never had a negative attitude. If I didn't know any better, I wouldn't think I was in the quote-unquote stereotypical place of Texas, right? Austin is a very, very welcoming place, and I expect that all of the conference attendees, as well as any of our listeners who might visit, will have the same experience there. We've got a few minutes to talk about just some of the highlights of the conference. Yeah. There's some really exciting classes that are being offered for our non-law enforcement listeners who might wonder what goes on at a conference like this. What are some of the topics that are going to be presented that you think are really important?
I think as, you know, we move forward now in this current landscape that we're in, it's very important to not only listen to stories of others, but also to build coalitions and build relationships. Because I don't think our community, when I speak of that, either the law enforcement community or the queer community has the luxury anymore to stand on the sidelines and continue to throw stones at each other. We've got to find ways to work together. We've got to find ways to build coalitions. We've got to find ways that we can build relationships with others in order to not only keep us safe, but for us to be successful. So some of the different panel discussions that we'll talk about, which are within this program, is we're going to talk about intersectionality between race, ethnicity, orientation, identity, and being somebody who's queer identified, right? Working in this field. Those challenges. We're going to talk about the trans experience, especially trans people that are working within the criminal justice system, and how unique that is and how challenging those are. We have the pleasure of being able to have an American icon, Freedom of winner, which is Judy Shepherd and Dennis Shepherd, that are going to be at the conference to sit and talk about their experiences, but also talk about why this is still important today, mm-hmm. and how we get better at it. How do we continue to move the needle forward? We have some folks that'll be coming in, talking on a more global perspective about things. We're going to talk about COPS and Pride, and we're going to talk about that experience from a variety of different angles, pros and cons of that. We're going to talk about how to build an effective LGBTQ liaison system moving forward. One of the other things I'm incredibly proud of and excited is you and your organization and Out to Protect. You know, the Flag in the Map program is coming for y'all to talk about that, and then talk about the actual history of the Pride Flag with the Gilbert Baker Foundation. These are just some of the many highlights of incredibly gifted speakers that we've had the ability to come in. The other thing I'm very, very excited about, and I can't announce who it is yet, but we have also partnered with the Human Rights Campaign, the leading civil rights organization for queer identifying people in the United States. And they see the value in working with others to move us forward. Like I said, I don't think we can stay in our silos anymore and continue to throw stones. If we're going to be a robust community, if we're going to be a strong community, if we're going to be a community that the queer community looks at, meaning law enforcement and criminal justice, and sees that as a door to access and the value of that, we've got to work with others to build strong bridges. Yeah. And that's the theme of the conference, Bridging the Gap. And how do we do that? How do we build those strong coalitions moving forward? How do we build a criminal justice system that we're all proud to work in and be a part of, but also one that others see value in and are willing to access? Those are the highlights of what we're going to be doing.
Fantastic. Well, the conference is happening August 5th through the 8th in Austin, Texas. Sergeant Michael Crumrine, thank you so much for, first of all, your personal leadership and all of the time and effort and blood, sweat, and tears you're putting into this. It's going to be fantastic. But really, it's going to be fantastic for our entire community, and we appreciate it.
Thank you.
And that wraps up our hour. Be sure to tune in next Sunday night for Outbeat Radio's Living Proof with Sheridan Gold and Dr. Diana Grayer. That's at 8 p.m. and only here on KRCB Radio. In the meantime, have a great week, and thanks for spending your Sunday night with us. Outbeat News in Depth is hosted and produced by Greg Moralia. Our shows are available for on-demand play anytime on our website at outbeatnews.com and on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, and now on iHeartRadio. Find links to subscribe at outbeatnews.com.
I'd love to change the world, but I don't know what to. So I give it up to you.
You're broken down and tired of living life on a merry-go-round.
Support for Outbeat Radio on KRCBFM comes from listeners and from Rocky, the free-range chicken, and Rosie, the original organic chicken. Air-chilled, non-GMO, locally raised right here in Sonoma County with no antibiotics ever. More information is available at rockyandrosie.com. You're listening to 104.9 KRCBFM Roanoke Park and KRCGFM Windsor, Sonoma County's NPR station. It's 9 p.m. Stay with us. Le Jazz Hot is next.